Boy, the Derriere, London Derriere, call it what you will, Percy Grainger's arrangement, the St. Louis Symphony performing, and they were led by Leonard Slatkin.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for tuning in. Thanks also going out to our friends at Adre Appliance TV, Photo, and Sound on Carlisle in Dearborn. You know, Adre's been serving the community since 1955, and we're very thankful for their role in helping bring this classical programming your way through underwriting, as we call it, here on WHFR. They specialize in HDTV, digital cameras, and are an eBay trading assistant. When you call Adre at 313-274-9500, tell them thank you for bringing this beautiful programming your way. Speaking of beautiful programming, it is the season of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. Next performance, Friday, October 26th, Romantic Excursions. For details or tickets, please call the Dearborn Symphony office at 313-565-2424 or check them out online at dearbornsymphony.org.
Good morning, this is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next, an hour of local news and views, our public information show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Morning. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, November the 9th, 2007. Welcome to our show. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. That's Koronick, K-O-R-I-N-E-K, for those that want to mention it, right? When you send us an email, would come to WHFR at HFCC, Henry Ford Community College, our license holder, .edu. So again, if you have any comments or questions, either about this show or anything else we do here at WHFR, our email address is whfr@hfcc.edu. Now, you could also send us a message through our website. There's a place for comments at our website, too, and the website address, which has, if you haven't been there, has a lot of information about our station and what we're doing currently, updated every couple days with new information about our all-volunteer student staff and what we're up to. It is whfr.fm. That's right, whfr.fm, not .com, because we're not a commercial station, not .org, because we're very loosely organized, but we do have organs, yes we do, and sometimes we even play them, too. Yeah, Is that one of those shock jock double entendres? No, I hope not. Anyway, so please keep in touch. What's coming up now is, first of all, a summary of a very general summary of the local elections. It was not a big election year, not a, certainly a presidential year, or a race for the governor of the state. That's next year, next November. But some things were decided. Here in Dearborn, if I may be allowed to just speak off the top of my head, because the local papers coming out on Wednesday did not have all the numbers, but the Dearborn Press and Guide website, pressandguide.com, and I bet if you call the Dearborn Times-Herald office, they could just tell you over the phone what these numbers are, too. But in Dearborn, the first issue was school board members for the Dearborn Public Schools. And by the way, of course, these same people, whether they realized it or not, and I'm sure one of them does because he's an incumbent, are also members of the Board of Trustees of Henry Ford Community College. That one group of people handles all the issues and planning and budget and so on for both the Dearborn Public Schools, K-12, as it's referred to, and also Henry Ford Community College. So the winners were Joseph Guido. That's right. That's how he pronounces the last name, not Guido. But he's the incumbent, and he is returning. The other incumbent whose job position was up, Mary Lane Duchesne, did not run because through a number of circumstances that came up. Some people say it was her fault. Other people say it was the fault of the city clerk's office. Anyway, she didn't get to file legally for the election and missed the deadline, if you will, or what she filed was considered not in on time anyway. So that was, we covered that a couple months ago, but an incumbents usually do get reelected unless there's a big scandal or a problem or something like that. Well, the newspapers, and even the teacher union here at Henry Ford Community College recommended Hussein Berry and Mary Pechlikoff to get the other position. Everybody was also recommending that Joseph Guido be returned to office. And I have to say, as an opinion, I can say this after the fact, and remember, all opinions expressed in the show are mine only, not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, although I hope so. Okay. But I felt that I've always felt that Mr. Guido, and I've never talked to him in person, not at Dearborn Homecoming or anywhere else, but I'd love to. He's a very calm, professional, I'd say a businessman type, and that's not an insult in this reference, by the way. And he has good opinions. Okay, good straight arrow, no posturing or ego. He just really wants to do good things for the Dearborn Public Schools. And so I'm happy to see him reelected. But obviously other people felt that way too. Not only the people that endorsed him directly, but also those of you who voted. And about 15,000 people in Dearborn voted, which is not great, because I think there's about 50 or 60,000 people that are registered. So I think it was about 50% turnout, which I guess is not bad in a non-major election year, but maybe I'm overestimating. We'll get the actual numbers next week when we look at the precise figures. But the winners were Pechlikoff and Guido. And Mary's claim to recent fame is that she was also elected by the voters and served for the last year or more on the Dearborn Charter Commission. Ah, as they say in radio, segue time. Segue is a transition, folks. Because that's the issue that was on the ballot. All the work that was done by the Dearborn Charter Commission to look at the charter, which is like the city's constitution, okay, they proposed quite a few changes, a couple dozen changes, some more important than others to certain people. And both newspapers felt that those changes, and the mayor, and of course everyone on the City Charter Commission, who was still on the City Charter Commission, one person was removed from the Charter Commission for not being a Dearborn resident. That's right. Therefore not able to be elected to the commission. Well, anyway, they all thought it was a good idea. David Bazzy, B-A-Z-Z-Y, was the chairperson of the Charter Commission, and he appeared in many forums, as did the mayor and the other members of the Charter Commission, including Mary Pechlikoff, and spoke why they felt these changes were needed. And nothing too radical in there, folks. I think they were just modernizing, cleaning things up. That's my opinion. The opposition did say that they felt it gave the city a chance to raise your taxes. Well, they had that chance even in the past, and they didn't do it. In other words, they weren't at maximum, folks, in the past. We were a millage point or two below, a mill or two below what they could have been charging us even up to now. It's true that they did raise that, I think, by 2 mills from 13 to 15. And so, yes, if we were in a crunch time, either 5 years from now or 2 months from now, if the city council felt there was no other choice, they do have the right to raise the taxes more to a higher limit than what they were before. But the city charter changes were approved. Okay, and I don't know when they take effect, perhaps January 1st or something, but we will have a new charter. That does allow the mayor to combine departments, I think, rearrange the organization. That was thought to be advantageous for a number of reasons. Some people said, who voted against this, that It would give the mayor too much power. We already have a strong mayor type of government. Now, everything the mayor has to do still has to be approved by city council. So we're not making him a dictator or something. You know, we're not giving him those kinds of powers like certain leaders of certain countries around the world have, you know, called in the military and just taken over, like in Pakistan and so on. No, this is not that situation, folks. And the mayor and the Charter Commission people, including Mary Petchlikoff, did, I think, make strong statements. And so it was approved, I think, about 7,500 to 6,000. Okay? And so it wasn't real close, but there was a sizable number of people. Interestingly, I thought, because I, you know, unless they believe the scare mailing, and I do say a scare mailing, because the mailing actually said, I saw the first one that went out anyway that was against the charter being approved, and it said, your taxes could double. Now, there's no way that could happen, okay, with the charter revision stated the way it was. It's just 2 mils more from 13 to 15. To double, it'd have to go from 13 to 26, right? Let's, you know, do the math here. Did anybody take a basic math course? There's no way that your taxes could double. And some people, they heard that rumor, I think, and they were scared, or they felt, the mayor's got plenty of power. And I mean, are you really afraid of John B. O'Reilly's power? I mean, the man is a gentle soul. Now, I'm sure in a closed-door session, he's firm enough that he can do whatever, you know, he can get his point across. Let me put it that way. I don't think anybody thinks of him as a shrinking violet in any way. But Mayor Guido, was he imposing in person? You know, he did have a certain charisma, magnetism, but, I mean, that guy alone, you know, you did what he wanted, or you would suffer some very barbed puns coming right at you. Yes, he was good with words, Mayor Guido, and a great tribute coming up for him. They're naming the Performing Arts Center Theater after him in a nice ceremony coming up in a week or two. But getting back to the charter, it was approved, folks. So I don't think there's anything to fear. Yes, we have given, the majority have spoken, and we've given the council the opportunity, if they feel they need it, to raise your taxes. Remember, though, if you're a regular voter, you don't like what the city council did, you vote them out. Yeah, it's called democracy, folks. Okay? So if they raise your taxes higher than you think appropriate or possible or whatever, don't vote for them next time around. Run yourself or whatever, you know, and change it all. Okay, the last issue. Then we're going to move on to other topics. And I am joined in the studio today by our news director, Susan Morrell. And she's going to start talking in just a few moments. She's
good morning.
Okay, see, your mic's not on, so that doesn't help. Hang on. There you go.
Good morning, Jay.
Hey, good morning. I want to let people know you're there, but even though I'm not letting you talk right now. So.
Well, I'm chuckling in the background.
Okay. She's getting the jokes, folks, and that's all that matters.
We'll I always get Jay's jokes.
Yeah, you're still getting them?
So that's...
Okay. I'm trying to find out what mic she's on. Okay, yes, we're well prepared here on WHFR, all volunteer staff and so on. The other ballot issue was, as it turned out, more people voted in this issue than who voted in the Charter Commission issue. And I often wonder about that. But, you know, there's more total votes, yay and nay, on the issue of... what was the other issue? Okay, now I've forgotten. Oh, my goodness. See how important it was?
Very important.
Yeah. Okay, what the heck was it? See, I don't have the papers open in front of me, folks. Here it is. Dearborn Towers. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What happened with the Dearborn Towers?
Okay, it was like 8,500 to 7,000 said, yes, sell them if you can. If you can get the money, which is the way it was worded, if you can get the fair value after it was assessed, the fair market value. And, of course, market value of real estate is going down nationally, so maybe we better sell it quick.
Yeah.
But but if we don't get the value and if we don't get someone to pay the price of the assessed value, it won't sell. Okay, so I think there's a really good chance here, and considering the economy today, that even if we get an assessed value, I mean, they think right now they might get $7.5 to $8 million for the building, which is only 88 units, folks. It's not like 500 rooms or something. Okay, it's a relatively small facility. That's why it's only $7 to $8 million. But it's I bet the assessment or the real estate market value, even understanding it's Florida, Clearwater, Florida. Do they really have Clearwater in Clearwater? That's what I want to know.
It's a beautiful place. I've been there.
Well, you have been.
Yes.
Well, talk.
It's beautiful. It's what's not to love? What's
Florida
not to love?
Or Clearwater?
Clearwater.
You've been in Clearwater?
Yes, I've been to Clearwater. It's a beautiful, beautiful community.
Okay.
The water is beautiful. The sand is beautiful.
Uh-huh.
The lifestyle is beautiful. The condos are beautiful.
So what are you doing in Michigan?
Well,
yeah.
That's a good question.
Okay.
But the real estate has taken a dive in Florida.
Too, yes.
As
you know
well.
That. Okay. That's what I thought. It is happening more or less nationally, and it looks like, from some economic analyst, that it's the market is going to continue to decline, if only because of the bank scandals and the mortgage problems and so on. And everywhere except Michigan, the economy is not really in too much trouble. But now that the banks are kind of in trouble because of all the mortgages that are defaulting, and they're more in debt than ever, it looks like it's going to hurt that. So my thought is, I bet there's at least a 50-50 chance that we won't sell it in the next year or two, because number one, I bet the market estimates are going to be lower, like maybe only $6 million for that property, and then you have to find somebody who wants to buy it for that.
Well, my cousin has her house for sale, and she hasn't found a buyer.
There you are.
And she has a condo, beautiful condo right on the water.
In Florida?
And, yes, and she can't even find a renter, so what can I say?
And is that actually Clearwater, Florida, too, or nearby?
Well, it's nearby.
Okay. Nearby. Wow. See, this is why we have Susan Morrell on the show. She's been everywhere, done almost everything. If anybody can direct the news here... she's been part of it, folks. But no, that's what I thought. Thank you for the confirmation. So I'm not just talking off out of my nostrils. Yeah. Okay.
no comment on nostrils. We'll get into a nostril discussion on the air.
That would sound strange. So, but I thought it was interesting that this was more controversial, apparently, or maybe the charter issue. I asked some people. I said, why would you went into the polling place? And you got these choices. Why would you not vote on one of the two ballot proposals?
I'll give you the reason. And the reason is, sometimes people are unprepared, but they go anyway. They decide, I'm going to vote anyway. I'm not totally prepared on all of the issues. And I'm going to go and vote on the things that I'm aware of and that I understand.
Right.
And the other things that I'm not aware of and I don't understand, I'm not going to vote because I don't understand it.
And the other possibility, I guess, is that they don't care. They don't think it's an issue. And it was number one, well, I don't want to vote on it because I really don't have an educated opinion. Okay. Or, hey, it's no big deal. It doesn't matter either way, so I'm not going to vote on it. But it's interesting that in the election, almost 2,000 more people voted on the Dearborn Towers issue than voted on the charter being approved, the charter revisions being approved. And that just seemed like, so it was a hot issue that a lot of people went to the polls primarily with that in mind, that they're going to vote yes or no. And it wasn't just the naysayers that wanted to vote it for it because it did win by, as I said, at least 1,500 votes to consider selling it, to get the assessment price. And if that seems fair, then to see if anybody wants to pay it. And so, I think there's only a 50-50 chance that it's going to sell in the next year. In the next year, even, because I think it might have to be on the market for a while before it finds a buyer.
And I agree. Mm-hmm. And if it, if it comes in at a much lower price, they probably won't want to sell it.
Why would 8,500 people in Dearborn vote to sell it? Because everybody is aware. I think number one, Mayor O'Reilly campaigned. He put his name on the line, his political future maybe even on the line, and he said, "We need this option. We need this money in our budget right now." For other costs coming in, even though Florida's operation is breaking even right now, and there was difference of opinion on this side, and that was that they need some major renovations of that facility down there, and he felt they might not get all the money back by raising the lease payments, the lease rates to the residents. that it might have to be a long-term payback, like 5 years before they recoup, because you can't just double somebody's lease payment, you know. But if you need expensive heating, cooling, roof repairs or whatever, it's going to be a big chunk of money.
Well, they're also having a lot of other problems in Florida with insurance coverage, getting homeowners insurance.
Because of the weather problems.
Because of the hurricanes, Hurricane Katrina, and all the damages. And it's become a statewide political issue in Florida because people can't get coverage for their homes and for their apartments, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're buying a new place, like a new condominium complex, and you can't get insurance, there's a problem.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to buy a new.
So the governor has gotten involved and said he's going to demand that anybody who wants to sell any type of insurance in Florida, they have to sell homeowners, as well as auto or life or whatever.
Okay. Well, yeah, we wish the best for the outcomes here. Personally, I was in favor of both. I know people who did a lot of research, a lot of reading. They read, the mayor and the city's flyers, and I think because of the difficult economic times, in both cases, they want their city to maintain the amount of services and the quality of services, the quality of life they have now. If that means, just as a safety measure, that maybe they'll have to pay a little bit more in taxes in the future. If it's absolutely necessary, they're willing to do that. And in the Dearborn Towers issue, they think it's probably good, even though it's a break-even or make-a-little-money kind of thing, to plan and to try to get a fair value and to put that $8 million, hopefully, in the general fund here in Dearborn. That's also protection for rainy days or Michigan winter or whatever might happen. And it does make good economic sense, according to Mayor O'Reilly. I mean, I'm not an economist, although everybody probably knows you'd rather have money in the bank, you know, as an emergency than no money. I mean, that just makes sense. And the city of Dearborn's, as I mentioned, our rainy day fund, it was up to $40 million just sitting there, folks. Which Councilman Doug Thomas for years said, why should it just sit there? I mean, we don't need that much money. Well, the city has been dipping into it every year to balance their budget. In other words, the budgets, last budgets under Mayor Guido, they weren't balanced in terms of income. They still had to take $8 to $10 million each year out of that $40 million fund. And I understand that's down to, it's less than $20 million. I think it might be like $12 million or something remaining. So as Mayor Guido knew, and we talked about this, and he even made statements to the press at times, within a couple more years, whether it's 2 or 3 years, even of carefully, managed budgets, the city won't have that reserve. And then, the big cut for the next year, when you don't have any extra money in reserve and you can't dip in there, you will technically, really for the first time, have to have a totally balanced budget.
And just like the state of Michigan.
Yeah, well, right. I mean,
we're in trouble.
Right. So I think those that voted in favor, I'd say they were the more thoughtful, brave, and conservative, in a business sense, folks in the community. And I think if these two proposals go ahead, the city financially is on pretty solid ground for, especially if we can sell the Dearborn Towers, actually sell them the next year, for the next 4 or 5 years, that there won't have to be massive cuts of services or layoffs within city government at that point. So I think it was, I'm glad of the turnout was as large as it was. It's too bad it wasn't, 100% of everybody that's registered. Who knows what those people think about these issues or how the election would have gone if they voted. But nonetheless, there we are. So it looks like good, solid, forthright election results here in Dearborn.
Who knows? Maybe Donald Trump will buy it. In Florida.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
He likes to develop in Florida.
Yeah, I'm sure that's his style of investment. Not. Okay. Now, in Dearborn Heights, there were several races. Just brief comments here. And again, I'm not looking at any pieces of paper. That's why I almost forgot about the Dearborn Towers being on the ballot, because we don't have those results in the weekly papers. But in Dearborn Heights, the city council election, Baron Brown and, oh, my gosh, who was the first person's name? Here we go. It's It's Jay's memory time, and so we don't have anything in here. Okay, about so Barron and Brown won, and the big winner was somebody else. Yes, they were. Isn't that interesting? We don't see that. Here we go, maybe. Dearborn Heights. Okay. I'll recognize the name somehow. Yes, Elizabeth Aegis, or Aegis, A-G-I-U-S. She was an incumbent, as was Ken Barron. And they got the two highest vote counts because they had a name recognition. No big scandal. hadn't been recalled. Okay. And so they came in 1 and 2. And the other name was a Bob Brown. Now, I've heard that name, although it's a common name, in Dearborn Heights politics, I think, before. So he may have some other experience, or maybe he ran before. Our own hometown favorite, if you will, because he's a WHFR volunteer member, Ned Apigian, came in 4th.
And I voted for Ned.
Okay, you're a Dearborn Heights resident. So Ned,
yes.
That's where one of your votes came from. And our general manager said, Ned, you came in really close. Well, I think it was more than 1,000 votes difference between 4th place that he was in and 3rd place. But just a side comment, and whether or not... you know, he should have been elected or not, we're not saying, but we like Ned here. He's a funny guy, and he knows a lot. I've had him on the show talking about city planning, because that's what he's got a master's degree in, and well as being a licensed builder and architect, too, on both residential and business projects. And as I said on the air, I can't imagine why you wouldn't want that kind of experience on your city council. You should have at least one person
exactly.
who actually knows that stuff, since the city is always involved with building contracts and issues. And imagine having someone that knew about those details that could make a professional assessment. And it was just, and again, I raised the question last week. I don't understand the pros and cons of the other candidates, but none of the newspapers here endorse Ned either. Or other people, too. There
well,
was
they,
other people running.
You know, truthfully, Jay, one of the comments I have to make about the last several elections in Dearborn Heights, I've been a voter there for a long time, and we used to get things in the mail, telling about the candidates, telling about the issues, the pros and cons. I haven't received anything in the last year for the last several elections. So I went in stone cold. I mean, I had to go on to the internet and read the issues the night before.
Wow.
And I don't really like doing that, but that's what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to hear a little more debate
and
a little more clarification on the issues and the candidates.
Of course. Yeah, there might have been a League of Women Voters. I know that for the city council members, there was a League of Women Voters debate, if you want to call it that. In an hour, they had the 6 people. They all got their 3 minutes each or whatever, you know, including Ned. And but that was it is hard to find out about these issues. I don't know the results of the city charter changes in Dearborn Heights. They all seemed just straight arrow, like separating the library from the recreation department. How controversial could that have been? Everybody, I think, recommended that. A political solicitation, competitive bidding. I mean, just the way I read it, it just seems, yeah. Like, why not? Why weren't we doing it that way?
Well, they got a yes on competitive
bidding,
and they got a no on separating the library.
Oh, no kidding.
I believe that's the way it came out.
Well, I was upset, and I was only going to mention what I knew here. Thank you again for living in Dearborn Heights, even, and looking at these sources. But the request to give money to the schools, there was a millage proposal for the Westwood School District. It went down. Went down to defeat. Now, I don't know about the Wayne County Community College District millage reauthorization proposal. That would have been for the whole district. So that's Dearborn Heights and Detroit. And the other cities, not Dearborn, we have our own community college here that's just paid for by the people of Dearborn. 10-12% is paid for by people of Dearborn, and therefore we don't have to pay money to Wayne County Community College support. So I will update people on that next week. But the Westwood School District, which folks, by the way, is always in desperate trouble. This is not Crestwood, this is Westwood. Westwood gets some of the worst test results in the whole state of Michigan. They have a transient population of students. And I'm not saying it's immigrants, legal or illegal. I'm not saying it's all kids of military families, but it's that kind of thing. And it's very, very difficult since you only have the kids for a short period and they've been, bumped around, bussed around, moved around the country a lot. It's hard for them to have a consistent educational growth anyway. And lower economic situation, too, out there. And they didn't get it approved. Now, maybe the people who live in that area are equally low income and they just can't afford, to pay more money. But their kids are going to be suffering. And so I think that's unfortunate. I know that went down almost, I think it was about 3,000 to 2,000. So that 1,000 votes there, it was a large percentage voted down that Westwood proposal. Now, if I'm misspeaking here, folks, I could be. But, check your websites. Call people up if you're concerned. We'll have the actual precise numbers next week, and I will apologize if I've incorrectly stated some of the stuff. But
Jay, what did you think of the voter photo ID rule?
Well, I did absentee ballots, so I wasn't a hassle to me. I understand that some people, obviously, some people were unaware of this, and they didn't. They probably didn't like it to find out at the last minute at the election. Do you have a story there?
Well, I do have a story, and mm-hmm. this is from the Detroit Free Press from Wednesday, November 7th. It says that the voter photo ID rule sparked some complaints that the election upset some and prompted the NAACP Detroit branch to complain of possible civil rights violations. However, state and city officials deny that there were any problems, that they received any complaints. Some voters said they were turned away from polls as a result of the ID requirement. And the government officials said they received no complaints of voters being turned away. They described the voting process as mostly smooth and predicted no problems for presidential elections next year. But my understanding of this rule was that the League of Women Voters stated if you do not have a photo ID, you can sign an affidavit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That you are legally entitled to vote, that you don't have your ID with you, enlist your name, your address, and all of that, and you will still be entitled to vote. That was my understanding.
Yes, that's true, although I found out something about that, and that is that those people that vote without the ID and they sign the piece of paper, their votes aren't actually counted until days later, that their people cross-check. So these are called provisional voting. In other words, they put their ballots in, but they've got to be cross-checked to see if they really do exist somehow. And I don't know how they do that. So I'm not sure that immediately, certainly not immediately, those people without IDs that sign the statement that they are them will immediately be counted. That their votes won't necessarily be immediately counted. It might take days for that to happen.
But in this article in the Detroit Free Press, it does not mention that that was an option. Hmm. And when I went to the voter booth in Dearborn Heights,
yeah.
they had a sign, and it said, photo ID required.
Yep.
And that was it. It didn't give any further explanation. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And they told me verbally, do you have your photo ID with
right,
you?
Right.
So there were no other options available.
No kidding.
And I didn't inquire. So I perhaps should have inquired.
it's easier for everybody, less paperwork, if they just put a sign up saying voter ID required. And if you step in there and say, oh, I got to get it, they might go back home and get it, or maybe it was in their car or something. And so it's a hassle for them. But no, that's not what was approved. But I think this provisional voting stuff where maybe your vote won't even be counted, or at least not for a few days, that's really negative. Now, this issue nationwide, whether or not you need a photo ID to be able to vote, is coming up to the Supreme Court, I've heard. That it is, people are raising this question right to the Supreme Court, which, and a Supreme Court ruling would change whatever the states are doing to make it the same everywhere. Now, I think it should be the same everywhere in every state.
Well, do you think that we should have a photo ID requirement?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, really, other, well-organized modern states like France, you have to have your so-called papers, carte d'identité, that is, card of identity, identity card, with you at all times. everywhere.
Well, aren't you supposed to do that in the United States?
No, certainly not. There's no such requirement, no legal requirement that you carry ID. Now, if you're driving, of course, you're supposed to have your driver's license with you. But at any other time, no. Now, will the police hassle you or maybe temporarily restrain you or constrain you or detain you if you don't have ID on you and they're really concerned to find out who you are? Yes. Yes, so it will be a hassle for you if you're not carrying ID at all times here, picture ID, here in the U.S., just because the police can stop you, question you, hold you back from what you're doing, bring you to the station, if they think you might be a suspect in something.
Well,
and they don't know who you are until they run your fingerprints or check something else. They can hold you for a while. I think they can hold anyone for 24 hours.
Usually when I go for a walk or if I go for a bike ride, I usually don't carry my ID.
Right. You don't. There's no legal requirement to do that. And there hasn't been in many states, such as Michigan, a requirement to have picture ID. But this whole thing about immigration.
Well, that's
illegal
it.
Aliens.
That's it.
The threat of terrorists who are not we're not citizens in the U.S., although, believe me, as we know over the years, I think in the last 20 years, more people have been killed by terrorists that live and are citizens of the U.S. than people who are illegally here. But nonetheless, let's go back to the fear and trembling of Fox News and Glenn Beck and the others in terms of the immigration issues. They feel that we need to have a clear understanding, especially at the borders, of who is a U.S. citizen, who isn't. Now, again,
in New York, they're creating a 3-tier system with driver's licenses so that illegal aliens can get a driver's license. And my understanding is that is actually illegal because you have to have a social security number in order to get a driver's license, and they're not requiring that. And so there's a big legal battle over that issue.
There's no national federal guidelines on what sort of, IDs you're supposed to have to drive.
But what happened to the Real ID Act? Wasn't there a Real ID Act coming from Department of Homeland Security?
No, it was talked about, but it's never been, I don't even think it's been brought up in committee. Or if it's still in committee. In other words, it's never been brought up for a vote in the House or Senate in Washington, D.C. Should it be? Most people say, well, there's no problem. I don't think it's going to make us any safer because people, number one, can get fake identity cards, fake passports. The rich people, they'll find ways to fake it. Number two, we have just as many people, believe it or not, you don't want to believe this about a citizen of the United States, who don't like the United States, or they're just crazy. I mean, they got very strange ways of thinking, and they would rather kill people for their, and they're a citizen. And that's okay. We try to respect everybody's different opinions and beliefs, as long as they're not going to hurt anybody. You know,
well, they would rather kill people. I don't know where you're going with that.
Well, what I'm saying is like with the Columbine massacre and the Timothy McVeigh in Kansas, those were those young people and the older person, U.S. citizens. They did terrorist acts. They killed a lot of people. Well, you know, they could have gotten all these identity cards, these real IDs. It wouldn't stop people. The 300 million people in the U.S. Are still also some of them. Are wackos, okay? Some of the 300 million people would rather kill than talk. They would steal, they would lie, they'd cheat. Some of them are in prison, many of them are not at this point. And so I think it's to say, oh, if we just get an ID card for everybody, then we'll be totally safe. No, we're not that kind of homogeneous group of people in the U.S., and we do respect individual differences, supposedly. So it's not going to be a magic bullet. Am I in favor of it? I guess because I'm in favor of this, I even carry my passport with me all the time.
I just don't think that people who are here illegally should have the right to vote. I mean, they're here illegally. Mm-hmm. They're not citizens. Obviously, they're already doing something illegal. Why should they be entitled to vote? Because they're not even citizens. So,
on this issue, let's talk about an upcoming show. You were scheduling a guest sometime soon, a nationally known speaker on this issue of immigration?
Yes. Jerome Corsi is going to be here next week for a telephone interview. He won't be here in person.
And, on this show?
Yes.
Wow.
And he has
I'm glad you told me.
He has written a book called The Late Great USA. Mm. And so he has a very fine political mind, and he is a professor at Harvard University.
And he ran for president, too.
And he actually ran for president, as you tell me, under the Constitution Party. But I've heard him speak numerous times on actually television, and he's an excellent speaker.
And that's something to look forward to, folks. Again, assuming our technology holds up and the phone lines are possible, and Mr. Corsi is not teaching class at Harvard at the time. looking forward to his words. We're going to give him at least a half an hour, a nice chunk of time to explain himself and his views on the situation. I'm interested to see what he feels not only about the national identity card and whether or not we should build that big wall between U.S. and Mexico that Glenn Beck and other Fox News people want to have happen, but the border situation between U.S. and Canada. What does he think about that and so on. I have to say, personally, I don't totally agree with the, this is just personal, with the positions of the Constitution Party, but this man is very intelligent, and he has some very interesting ideas about these issues. So we're going to feature James Corsi.
Jerome.
Okay, I'm looking at her and trying to get confirmation. Jerome, Professor Jerome Corsi, Dr. Corsi,
doctor.
Probably.
Yes, he's a doctor. He's a PhD.
If we start feeling sick during the air, when we're on the air, we can ask his diagnosis. Okay.
Not that kind of a doctor.
But Late Great USA is his book, and it's somewhat a conservative, Fox News-oriented point of view about immigration, but very intelligent thoughts. Anybody that writes a book, well, anybody that even reads a book these days, all the way through, not skipping pages, I give them tremendous credit, and it's worthy of our time to listen to that, and especially to see what his spin is on the U.S.-Canadian border, too.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And he's going to talk a little bit about the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which has been sort of an under wraps topic as far as the media has been concerned, and so I'm very anxious to find out what he has discovered about
excited
that.
In fact, not nervous, but excited.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm actually excited because he's done a lot of research. Right. He's a fabulous researcher. And so
well, thank you for getting that scheduled. That's why we have a news director, folks. she actually is on the phone and thinking about things so that the show has more significance and can fill in the gaps between what I say or what I can't remember to talk about. We want to take just a couple of moments here for some non-commercial announcements, and we'll be right back with more WHFR Journal.
Hey, this is the Gotha Billy Man, this week on The Wrecking Hour.
He made the piano a rock and roll instrument, then he set it on fire.
Come on over, baby, whole lot of shaking going on.
I'm Rosie Flores. Join me for the incendiary career of Jerry Lee Lewis on Whole Lot of Shaking from PRI, Public Radio International.
That's Monday on The Wrecking Hours, 4 to 6 p.m. right here on the station Making Waves, 89.3 FM, WHFR, Dearborn.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
Please join us for a WHFR benefit on Saturday, November the 10th. from 9:30 p.m. until 1:30 a.m. at the New Place Lounge. That's located on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. We will be featuring the live blues music of the Carl Cavallero Band. Howard Glazer and the EL34s. Lady T. If you are over 21, a $5 donation at the door lets you in for all of the fun. Food and beverages will be available for purchase. That's Saturday, November the 10th, a benefit for WHFR at the New Place Lounge on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. Have a good time. Hear some great blues and support WHFR, making waves since 1985.
Yes, we're going to have a great time tomorrow night. If you don't know about local Detroit blues and how good the artists are, obviously we feature 16 hours of blues, including Blues Times on Thursday with Mr. White, Roger White, who's coming up at 11 o'clock today with Big Band and more until 1 o'clock. And so stay tuned for that. But tomorrow night, it is a benefit for WHFR. Yes, we have to raise money because without the money, we can't stay on the air. The college doesn't pay. It only pays for, less than half. It's about less than 30% of our budget. And our budget almost always just goes for microphones and headphones and replacement light bulbs and so just the basics, folks. Now, nobody gets any pay except myself, and I'm paid out of a teacher fund, not directly from the HFR budget. So, Susan McGraw and Laura Rousset, operations manager and general manager in reverse order there, and a little teeny stipend of $100 a week to our program director and $80 a week to our music director, since they put in 20, 30 hours a week to do those jobs. Our news director gets nothing.
Zero.
Yeah, sorry, Susan. Didn't even have your mic on.
Big, large zero.
But I did offer to double Susan's pay for next year, so she was going to get double zeros.
Double
next year.
Zero.
Yeah.
That's a promotion.
Yeah. So we wanted to take the discussion. This is the new WHFR Journal. We're making waves. Can't get this on any other radio station in the area. We thought we'd stay with the water or get into the water or bridge metaphor because, first of all, the bridge issue is one that Jack Lessenberry has raised in his column in the Metro Times this week. That's right, the Ambassador Bridge. Okay, so and I'd like to feature this really quick, and then we want to talk about the water that runs under it and water quality provisions that are going to be happening. And maybe we don't need them even, according to another story. Well, here's Jack Lessenberry's story. State Senator Alan Cropsey, he's a Republican from DeWitt, west of Lansing, isn't a guy you would normally think of as a transportation expert. During his college days at that intellectual powerhouse, Bob Jones University, that's satire, folks. Bob Jones is known for right-wing conservative Christian school. And in fact, it was only school that in the 60s they were trying to get permission to have automatic weapons on the towers surrounding the campus so they could protect it from hippies. I kid you not, they put a request in that they wanted their security guards to have automatic weapons to protect their campus from all those long-haired hippies, the radicals. Yep. I don't know. I guess they thought the hippies were, you know, so together, so well organized that there was going to be a hippie army or something, which would be a contradiction in terms. I mean, I thought it was love and flower power. You know, I didn't know that they were organized as an army to attack Bob Jones unit. So,
yeah, they're preoccupied with smoking marijuana.
And this other little fact that's always interesting is that Billy Graham went to Bob Jones University. Billy Graham, the wonderful minister and preacher, TV evangelist for many, many years. He's still alive, isn't he? But he's not doing preaching actively now. He's quite old, but I think his son is doing some preaching. But the point is, they kicked Billy out. He was too radical. He was too radical, and he thought it was a very conservative. I mean, he was, you know, ministering to Richard Nixon in the White House, and you know, very conservative, Republican oriented, and he was too radical for Bob Jones Universities, and so they kicked him out of Bob Jones University in the 60s. So you can see how conservative, and just by those two things, and I know it's not fair to generalize based on two specific crazy examples, but that's Bob Jones. So when he says the intellectual powerhouse that Bob Jones University is, it's a situation of that they're very single-minded. They're good, honest, even Christians in their own minds, but they are very single-minded. I won't say closed-minded. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Sometimes it's good to be single-minded. Sometimes. I don't think so in general. Okay, so you don't normally think of yourself as an intellectual powerhouse unless you have a lot of diverse ideas constantly churning around and coming to the fore at times, and therefore you're making the best decisions possible because you're always considering a lot of options. That's why he says that. Well, that's Cropsey. Cropsey comes from Bob Jones University. Anyway, there he learned how to teach math. And Lessenberry says, fundamentalist math naturally to little kids because it's a fundamentalist school.
What is fundamentalist math?
I don't know. Is it a countdown to Armageddon or something? Is
that, probably.
You only learn to count backwards. You know,
yeah.
It's 10, 9, 8. Okay. I don't know. That's my joke. Anyway, Cropsey is not on the Transportation Committee, but he has been fighting hard to protect the interests of Matty Moron. That's not Matty Moron. It's spelled Moron. Who is a shadowy billionaire who wants monopoly control of commercial traffic across the Detroit River. Now, old Matt, as Lessenberry calls him, has that now, thanks to his ownership of the Ambassador Bridge. Economically, that ancient bridge is the single most important border crossing between the U.S. and Canada. More than $100 billion worth of stuff crosses it every year. And if something were to happen to it, there's no backup system.
Well, let me ask you this, Jay. If somebody owns a bridge...
Mm-hmm.
How do they make their profit from the tolls that are collected?
Yeah, and Lessenberry, I'll jump down here. Lessenberry says that that's a problem because if the state runs, for example, the Mackinac Bridge, and the state, you know, obviously has to, I know their chart, they're going to raise the toll on the Mackinac Bridge too because they're not getting enough money in to maintain it. But it's still so much less. Okay, that if the state ran it, there would be much lower tolls than this private person. So he's charging pretty high tolls because he wants to make his significant personal private profits. And that does seem wrong to me. But this guy, to summarize here, Mr. Moron, Matty Moron, the shadowy billionaire, and with Alan Cropsey, they have been against the... Canada and U.S. and millions of dollars have gone into research on building a government-owned bridge in collaboration with the Canadians somewhere else. Mr. Maroon, who owns Ambassador Bridge, he said, well, just stop even working on that. I'll build another one right next to the Ambassador Bridge, side by side, which is a stupid idea because if a bomb goes off and destroys the first one, it'll probably smash down and fall into the second one. So that doesn't make any sense to me at all, except that he would keep all the profits. And there's numerous reasons why even the Canada wouldn't go for a second bridge next to the first one, that they were talking about it downriver somewhere. And, you know, I think even going to an island as a way station, like going to... Gros Isle, and then from Gros Isle to the U.S., that might even be cheaper because you'd actually go from one little bridge to the island to another little bridge, you know, back to the U.S., and it wouldn't cost as much as a span that would have to go the whole distance. But anyway, there's a committee looking into this, both U.S. and Canadian committee, Anyway, we probably don't want Alan Cropsey and his support for private profit, Matt Maroon, to handle that. But let's talk about other water issues here that came up in the election. We have about 8 minutes to go before big band music.
Well, President Bush experienced the very first veto in his presidency with high-profile projects for Michigan and the Great Lakes at stake on Tuesday, a bipartisan coalition in the House easily overrode President George W. Bush's veto of a bill authorizing hundreds of water-related projects nationwide, and many, many, many of them are right here in the state of Michigan. And my understanding, it was a billion-dollar project. So that is good for Michigan, and it's good for other states. It's going to improve and restore the Everglades in Florida and improve flood protection and drainage canals in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And so that is wonderful news. Now, the only catch to that is that those projects can now be funded, although local communities must provide matching funds. What about that?
Sure. Well, that means they got to find the money. It has to be new money, even though it's a lot less than what it would cost, and there might be significant benefits to the community long term. You still have to find the extra money, and that's a question certainly in Michigan.
Yeah, because Michigan is so very strapped for cash, we're having the budget war in Lansing continues.
Let me, talking about water and environmental things that include water and lakes and rivers and so on, this is a very positive article. Barbara Ziemba in the Press and Guide wrote this, and it was in this last Wednesday's edition on the front page, that the river, that is the Rouge River coming through our area, and the watershed, that is the whole area that feeds the water into the rivers and creeks and streams and so on, continues to improve. So our ecosystem is doing pretty well here compared to what it was doing a few years ago. Let me just briefly summarize the story. If the proliferation of wood frogs, American toads, stoneflies, and other creatures is any indication, then the Rouge River and its watershed are doing all right. That's the finding of a group of environmentalists that gathered last week Friday at the University of Michigan Dearborn to listen to a sort of State of the Rouge presentation. It was sponsored by the Alliance of Rouge Communities. That includes Dearborn, Allen Park, Melvindale, and Romulus, along with Wayne County representation and the Wayne County Airport Authority, and 38 other communities. Okay, so it's pretty much everybody around here. The other sponsor was the Rouge River Gateway Partnership, whose members include the cities of Dearborn, Allen Park, and Melvindale. Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly said his connection with the cleaning up of the Rouge goes back to 1986 when he was working for U.S. Representative John Dingell, a Democrat, Dearborn. He also said he remembered that whatever was in the sewage from outfalls along the Rouge ended up in the river. He says it was a tragic mistake. But Dearborn, along with other communities, have taken steps to correct that, he said. The city is spending $320 million, the city of Dearborn is spending $320 million to mitigate 21 outfalls going into the Rouge. Mitigate means to stop, right? You're going to decrease tremendously the outfalls. The project eclipses, as they stated it, all of the city's capital improvement projects over the past 30 years. All the attention seems to be working, though, as the river and its watershed are showing signs of revival. Yeah, if the water and the land is polluted and stagnant and dead, if something won't even grow or something can't even live in it, then what's the hope for humans eventually? You know, I mean,
right.
we'll be poisoned by our own land and our own water. And so these are important issues, folks. I mean, they are core central even to our lives now and in the future. So thank goodness that people are working on this. And even though this project is so huge, $320 million, that's more than the sewage overflow project, or maybe that is the sewage overflow project.
Well, it says here $35 million to cut Michigan sewer overflows.
Well, that's going to help maybe this whole thing, right? Kelly Cave, who's the director of Water Quality Division for Wayne County's Department of the Environment. I didn't even know Wayne County had a Department of the Environment. That's good. I just thought there was a Department of Environmental Quality in the state of Michigan, but it looks like Wayne County's got one of their own. Kelly Cave, C-A-V-E, is the head of it. That's great. She says what was once considered a sewer is now thought of as a resource. Wow, that's a big change then. Water quality, she says, a quote from her, and the ecosystem in the watershed continue to improve. We used to find empty mussel shells. We found a live one at the Douglas Evans Nature Center just recently, and that's in Birmingham. One. that's kind of discouraging. They found a live one. That's her word. Well, one is better than none, I guess. Is that a trend from zero to one? That's a 10 million percent improvement or something. So that's good. However, in 1994, the Rouge met state standards only 30% of the time, and E. coli bacteria, which can make you really sick, folks, and kill you, continued was really bad then and continues to decline today, as do phosphorus levels. That comes from too much, too many soap products, you know, the kind of soap that you use in your washing machine usually to clean your clothes had a high phosphorus content for years, and that kills good stuff in the water and makes E. coli bacteria even more prevalent, which is why you don't want to walk in the water, swim in the water, drink the water anymore. We only have 2 minutes to go. I guess we've got to sum up here. I highly recommend people also in the Times Herald, you read the editorial opinion of John D. Dingell. I just mentioned Mr. Dingell. Not only environmentalist, but he is straightening out some myths and talking about realities in regard to the sometimes called the S-chip, but the CHIP stands for Children's Health Insurance Program. It's actually not a chip that you either eat or put in your head or something. It is, that stands for an acronym, as they say, Children's Health Insurance Program. If the President Bush had his veto overridden for the first time ever, what, 7 years into his term now, for the water quality bill, there might be hope for the Children's Health Insurance Bill, which is just an expansion of Medicare, and everybody says Medicare works. Okay,
I'm not in favor of it.
Oh, okay.
I agree.
Well, you only got 30 seconds to tell us
why not.
I agree
with Bush on this one, okay. And because of the way it's being funded, and it's being funded by an additional tax on smokers. I don't think that's fair. I think if everybody's in favor of it, it should be a tax across the board and a step towards universal health care. Instead of penalizing one group of smokers, it's a regressive tax.
Gotta go. Thanks, Susan Morrell, for being on the show today. Stay tuned for big band music and more. Let's keep stirring things up out there, folks. And this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.